Chapter 15, 20th of January.
Dad always said, bad experiences make life interesting. I'm tired of an interesting life. I'd like a dull one from now on, please. My head hurts. I feel like if I get up from my bed, I will collapse onto the floor and not have the strength to get back up again. And believe it or not, it's not because I'm hungover. I'm not. I'm just dying of embarrassment. Internally, shriveling up at the horrific fact I threw myself at the world's fourth sexiest man last night. We'd wrapped late, both exhausted, but for some reason, Jack was adamant he was going to take me out for dinner. So we went, and I started drinking. Oh God. The restaurant was nice. The staff were pissed off that we showed up half an hour before closing, but all was quickly forgiven when Jack gave an outrageously large tip up front. I thought I'd go for something small to get dinner over with as quickly as possible. But then Jack went ahead and ordered four separate starters, three mains, and almost every side available on the menu. "You've got to be taking the piss," I said to him, just as the waitress scurried off with the longest order for two people ever.
"What?"
Jack shrugged, sipping his pint.
"I'm hungry."
"It's bad enough. We walked in just as they were wiping down the kitchen, but now you've gone and ordered half the menu. Can we have just got a drink and let them go home?"
"Why do you care?"
I bit my tongue, genuinely a bit embarrassed to admit I work the majority of the time in the hospitality industry. I've been that poor waitress, who's probably been here since God knows when, whose feet hurt, and all she wants is her bed. "We're the only ones here," I pointed across the deserted restaurant. "I just feel bad for the staff, that's all."
"It's their job."
Jack folded his arms across his chest.
"And I'm paying them, aren't I?"
I took a hefty gulp of my double rum and coke. "God, you're so obnoxious." Another gulp. "I just think you should be a little bit more considerate of people's feelings, Jack. Okay?" Jack's left eyebrow raised.
"Are we still talking about the staff?"
Another gulp, and another, and another, and another. The bubbles burned my throat, the rum warming my chest, filling me with liquid courage. "You just sometimes say things without giving much thought to the possible consequences. Like, you say things that are hurtful, but you don't really seem to care."
"Oh, and you don't,"
Jack snorted.
"You made me feel about this big."
He pinched his thumb and forefinger together.
"After you spat out that entire speech about how ridiculous drama schools are. And even smaller when you mocked me for going to one. Making yourself out to be better than me because you never went to drama school."
I wiped my mouth dry with the back of my hand, my glass drained. "I never said I didn't go to drama school." Jack paused, thrown.
"Well, did you?"
"Sort of." Jack scowled.
"It's not a sort of question, Mel. You either did or you didn't."
"Technically I did, yes. For the first month and then I dropped out."
"Why?"
Unable to stop it, the sound of my mum crying down the phone suddenly filled my ears. I could suddenly see myself curled into a ball on my bedroom floor, Freddy awkwardly standing over me, unable to comfort me, my mum explaining that her days were now numbered. I swallowed hard, casting the painful memory aside. "He just wasn't for me." I avoided any further questions by flagging down the waitress and ordering another double rum and coke. Then, once she'd gone, I swiftly changed the subject. "So, how does your girlfriend feel about you being away for so long?" Of all the things to come out of my mouth, that was the last thing I expected to actually make it to the front of the line. Jack smirked against the rim of his still very full pint glass.
"I don't have a girlfriend,"
he confessed, though I already sort of knew that, I think. "Oh, I'm sure I read somewhere that you were dating that..." I racked my brain for one of the names Osse had said. "Katie? Kayleen? Something or other?"
"Kimberly."
I began to play with my empty glass, suddenly very aware of my hands. "Where's the food? What's taking so long?"
"Yeah, Kimberly isn't my girlfriend."
"You broke up then?" Jack shook his head.
"Not as such. We weren't ever really together."
I felt my eyes roll. Oh, really? Jack pushed the basket of complimentary bread across to my side of the table.
Yes, really. We went on, like, one date during the first season. Quickly realised it's stupid to dip your pen in the company ink, especially with two more seasons being commissioned, and called it quits. Though the fans responded so well to the possibility of us dating that the show owners orchestrated a PR stunt.
A PR stunt? I snorted, shoving a piece of bread in my mouth.
You've never heard of one before?
In movies, I said, breadcrumbs spraying about. And like gossip columns. They're not real. Jack gave me a look, his previous comment about me being naive coming to the forefront of my mind. My jaw dropped. As if. Jack simply nodded and sipped his pint again. Maybe he had a point. Maybe I am naive. So completely clueless about an industry I thought I knew quite well. But then again, this is a level of the industry I've never been at and probably never will be a part of.
How's your player coming along?
Jack asked, just as the starters and my second drink were brought to the table. Not great, I confessed. Writer's block is a biatch, as usual.
What are you struggling with?
Literally what to write, I snorted, amused by my own incompetence. I haven't a clue what I'm doing.
Have you tried writing what you know?
Meaning what?
Well, that's the saying, isn't it? Write what you know. So this woman being at a crossroads, deciding what to do next, is that something you've experienced? Have you been through what she's going through?
He remembered the summary I gave him. Sort of. I mean, at the moment, I'm writing that she's stuck between the boyfriend she's with, who is a bit of a bellend. Not nasty, just not right for her. And the bloke who she likes, but who's also in a relationship and emotionally unavailable.
Right. And you've been through that, have you?
Jack smirked, clearly finding the idea of me being in the middle of a love triangle almost laughable. You find that hard to believe? I asked, my face burning up. I gulped down some more of my drink, growing more infuriated by Jack's lack of response with every second of silence that ticked by. There are some blokes out there who don't find me repulsive, you know? Jack's eyebrows furrowed.
Why would you even say that? No one thinks you're repulsive, Mel.
You do. I drained my glass, Jack's face having turned to stone. He blinked at me, completely thrown, probably taken aback by the fact I'd even had the balls to call him out on his crappy behaviour. Like I said before, I continued, sometimes you say things without thinking. And those things can be really hurtful. Like this afternoon, you said that the articles about us were repulsive, that the idea of us dating is repulsive, that I am repulsive. There was a long pause before Jack broke out into a deep, joyous laugh.
God, I knew you had your knickers in a twist today, but bloody hell, that is mental.
It's not funny, Jack. Jack sipped his pint, still chuckling under his breath.
Oh, but it is. You literally heard me say, some really repulsive stuff has come up because of those articles and you make it about you.
You weren't talking about me? I asked, dumbfounded. Jack shook his head.
I've had messages from Kimberly's psychotic fanbase accusing me of breaking her heart and making her suicidal for well over a week now. I've had newspapers call me a womanising misogynistic player. When in reality, I was taking Jasmine out to try and get to know her a little better before I'd snog her face off for the next 4 months.
I blinked. There was so much to unpack. So much I needed to apologise for. However, one thing Jack said had taken precedence. I couldn't let it slide. Did you seriously just say snog? I laughed. Who the hell says snog nowadays? Jack rolled his eyes and slid one of the starter plates towards me.
Shut up and eat some food, you mad bin.
We continued to eat and drink, actually beginning to enjoy each other's company, dare I say. As the waitress cleared our table, Jack asked,
What do you plan on doing with the script when it's done?
I stared at him blankly. I can't even get my acting gear to get it finished, let alone think and plan about what to do with it after.
I have a couple of contacts I can give you if you want to get it on the fringe scene. Or I can ask my agent if he knows of any literary agents who are scouting.
I don't need your pity, Jack, I snapped. I wasn't sure why he was being nice to me, but I was getting an iffy feeling about it. Or maybe that was the 4 shots of rum sitting in my stomach.
I'm not giving you pity.
Jack rubbed his brow, frustrated.
It's called networking.
Which you said was bullshit. Jack pondered.
I did say that, yes.
So, if it's not networking and it's not pity, why are you being nice to me?
Because I like you.
What? You like me? Felt like I was going to burst into flames. My face had grown so hot.
Do you want another double rum and coke before I pay up?
I think I heard him ask. Another drink? I'm going to need one. Jack had said he liked me. Like, those actual words. No ifs, no buts, no coconuts, just plain and simple.
Jack, the blonde Hollywood heartthrob, had just said he liked me. Holy crap!
Jack paid, and in the freezing cold, my head still spinning, we made our way to the hotel. The rum coursing around my body convinced me I was warm enough, but Jack wasn't having it. He was adamant, he could see me shivering, and gave me his coat. Despite the lingering smell of smoke, the leather was warm and comforting. Jack lit up a cigarette and offered me a drag.
You don't smoke?
No, I have tried though, I replied, purposefully omitting the fact I tried once when I was 13, behind the back of the bike sheds at school. I got Nicky Rush so bad I threw up on my friend Mariam, who then spent the rest of the day in a PE kit our teacher had dragged out of Lost and Found. Mariam hadn't known which was worse, smelling of my vomit or someone else's cheesy Veruca BO. How much do I owe you for my half of the bill? Jack shook his head.
Nah, tonight was on me. We were supposed to be celebrating your last day being tomorrow after all. You can get the next one.
Next one? I swallowed the hard lump in my throat. I really wish at this point that I hadn't downed that third drink. I was being torn by two very stubborn and furious parts of my brain. One half was telling me this was the guy who had willfully ignored me on multiple occasions, mocked my naivety, and been obnoxious and egotistical, and I knew I really despised him. But then, there was the half of me that was screaming out that this guy liked me. He'd made a point of telling me he didn't have a girlfriend, and he had paid for dinner, so was this in fact the end of a date?
What do I usually do at the end of a date? I don't even know. I can't actually recall the last time I went on a date. Jesus! When was the last time I kissed someone? It wouldn't have been Freddy, so that would only mean the last person I kissed was... Suddenly I was wondering what it would be like to kiss Jack.
Would his lips be warm? Soft? Would he taste of smoke? Or beer? Would he put his hands on my waist? In my hair? Wrap his fingers round the back of my neck and pull my body close to his? That was the moment I then threw myself on him. I don't know what came over me, but before I knew it, I was on him. And then I wasn't. Just out of the lift and running to my hotel room, which just seemed to be getting further and further away. I fell into the room and slid to the floor, my head in my hands. What a dickhead. I've managed to avoid Jack all day. It wasn't too difficult, as it was clear he was also trying to avoid me. I could say I wanted to apologise to him for what happened. But that would mean speaking to him, and with this being my last day, there was really no point. Jasmine came to my trailer with a bunch of flowers, a nice surprise, and gave me a big squeeze. She only had a few minutes to express her gratitude for all the line runs and girl chats and hoped we'd work together again soon, though that statement came out with very little conviction. We both knew, deep down, how the industry worked, and how very unlikely it was that we would see each other again. I headed out of my trailer and towards Dermot's car where he was waiting for me. It had been almost a month of him driving me to and from base and I still couldn't understand a single word he said. He opened up the back passenger door. You got everything you need, Mel? I heard him ask, but he could have been telling me I had an interesting smell. God knows. As I was about to clamber in, Jack yelled, Oi! From the other end of the car park. He started jogging over, still in his pilot uniform. I felt like there should have been an orchestra playing somewhere to really complete the leading man aesthetic he was going for. Thought you could sneak away without saying goodbye. That was the plan, I thought. Jack made his way around the car and wrapped his arms around my waist.
Come on then, give us a squeeze.
I reluctantly hugged him back. Then it occurred to me this was perhaps a perfect moment to apologise. Look, about last night...
Don't worry about it.
Jack shrugged, pulling away.
It was, cute.
Cute? No guy who is interested in a girl refers to her drunkenly mauling him as cute. Clearly, when he'd said I like you, he meant only in a platonic way. I needed to backtrack, save myself any further embarrassment, and turn the conversation around so I didn't come across as a desperate loser. Yeah, I stepped away from him. I was just going to ask you what happened. I don't really remember anything past leaving the restaurant.
Oh.
Jack's eyes widened.
Well, nothing really. I just walked you back to your hotel room and then we... Well, you... You went in and I went to my room.
Glad he went along with it. Maybe he does have a half-decent bone in his body. It was nice meeting you, Jack, I said without thinking, passing him the bunch of flowers Jasmine had given me. Good luck with everything. And your granddad. I hope it all goes well with him. I then fell into the back of the car and immediately cringed into the back seat. Why had I said that? Why had I ended my brief existence in Jack's life like that? Of course all isn't going to go well with his granddad. The poor bastard is dying. He's a ticking time bomb for Jack and I... Oh, God. I'd become one of those people who I hated while Mum was sick. They'd say things like, at least she's in a better place, or at least she's no longer in pain, or my absolute favourite, everything happens for a reason. There's no right thing to say to someone who is in the midst of losing a loved one, but there are a hell of a lot of wrong things to say, and I'd just spat out a top contender. I'm going to be overthinking that horrendous goodbye for the rest of my life, I swear. I'll be on my deathbed, thinking back on that moment and weeping. Or maybe I won't. Maybe it wasn't that bad. It was that bad. I'm never getting over this. Chapter 16, 21st of January. Jet lag from a 30-minute flight is unlikely, but not impossible. Kind of like getting an STD from a Christian summer camp. It happens. Ian hasn't left me alone since I walked through the front door. I'm tired, hungry, and coming down from a 3-week-long adrenaline high. He hit me with a machine gun of questions before I'd even set my bags down. Who did you meet? Who did you talk to? Who are you friends with? Who this? Who that? The lad has turned into a pissing owl. Chapter 17, 24th of January. It's Milfoy, pronounced Milfoy. Not Millifilly, not Milfur, and certainly not,
ear love, I want a vanilla slice.
Well, I can't say I'm surprised, but I've not been home for 3 days and I'm already back waitressing. It's not like I was expecting to come home to the bells and whistles of a million job offers lined up, but I was hoping for something. An email from Bethany just saying hi would have been enough. Instead, I got a text from Charlie asking if I could cover their shift. So now I'm putting cake and skinny cappuccinos down in front of people, trying to convince myself this last month did actually happen. Only a few days ago, I was having lunch with Jasmine going through outfit choices for her next red carpet appearance and flicking through images of shoes that cost 3 times as much as my rent. Now I'm mopping piss off a bathroom floor. I was scrubbing down the toasty maker when I got a slight tug on my apron strings. It was Oliver, reaching over the counter, grinning smugly. You look well fit in that, he said, pulling me in for a kiss on the cheek. Threw me. Oliver hadn't so much as shook my hand before, not including the arse rubbing at Carlo's, let alone giving me a kiss.
Glad to see you're back from Hollywood in one piece.
He propped himself up against a table and crossed his extremely large tattooed arms across his chest. I laughed nervously. Yeah, only got back a couple of days ago.
Ian said you've been rubbing elbows with the bitch and famous.
I rolled my eyes. Mr. Blabbermouth has struck again. He's just chatting the usual rubbish. Ignore him. Anyway, before I get the sack, what can I get for you? Oliver puffed out his chest slightly, scanning the menu hanging above my head, grinning mischievously.
I'll take a coffee,
And a date if you're not too famous.
Righty-ho. What a moment to use that phrase for the first time. The problem with organising a date so spontaneously is no time, place or activity is actually decided on. All Oliver had said was, see you at yours tonight then. That's it. Is 4 p.m. too early to be night? 5 p.m? Oh God. Did I even want a date? Was I ready for a date? It was only 5 days ago I was locking lips with... Yes, I need a date, I told myself sternly. I need to well and truly let what occurred during Symbol of Freedom go, zone back into my actual life again and partake in anything that makes it interesting, including going on a date with Oliver, whenever he decides to show up. It's 7 p.m. I've changed outfits 3 times, my hair 4 times, and tried to eat and talked myself out of it 6 times. I'm sat here like a lemon. I've no idea where we're going or what we're doing. I'm currently dressed and ready for a dinner date. My hair is up, wearing nice heels, nice dress, etc. But 5 minutes ago, I was dressed for an activity date, like bowling or mini golf, so wearing jeans and trainers. My head is mush. This is officially going to go down as the worst date in history. If it does even happen. I'm ringing Amara to get her to do some damage control. Talk me off the edge.
Why don't you just text him?
She asked me down the phone.
It's not unreasonable to just pop him a message saying, just a quickie, what time are you thinking and what's the dress code?
What if he's changed his mind? I replied, pacing the length of the living room. What if he's not coming at all? Imagine I message him that and he's not even on his way.
Then he's a bigger bellend than even I thought he was capable of being.
At that point, there was a heavy knock on the door. I'll call you back. I swung open the front door. Waiting on the step was Oliver. Gorgeous, sexy Oliver, wearing jeans, a nice shirt, and... Is he seriously holding a bottle of wine? Hello, Hollywood. He kissed my cheek, then stepped over the threshold, letting himself in. It wasn't a date. It was a hookup. To be honest, I'll take what I can get.
Chapter 18, 8th of February. I have lost all confidence in how to spell the word February. The first R is really throwing me off. This month could not be going any slower. Ian is obviously bored with me, after weeks of giving the same answers of, sorry, Ian. Jasmine was lovely. She wasn't a bitch. There was no drama. Ian, I don't know if Jack is back with his ex-girlfriend. Don't ask me anything about Andrew. He didn't even bother to learn my name. Ian is now nowhere to be seen. The house is instantly untidy after I clean it, and I can hear snores coming from under his bedroom door, so I know he's not dead. Just not interested in me and my no longer showbiz life. Oliver has also dropped off the radar, unsurprisingly. Our hookup had gone as well as they ever can go. There's some awkward chat, a not-so-comfy cuddle on the sofa while watching a film, then, without warning, and out of nowhere, hey-ho, a boner. A minuscule amount of foreplay, a semi-decent shag, a wipe-up, and a kiss on the cheek goodbye. Not exactly the stuff of rom-coms. Not that they're realistic at all anyway. The couple always have sex and then cuddle. How? No one ever questions the lack of birth control in movies. Because when you do, it makes you realise how stupid they all are. If there was a condom, it would be removed almost instantly. If there wasn't a condom, then there is no way she is lying there wasting time. She's in a race against gravity. If films were realistic, she'd be up like a shot and hobble into the toilet, hand cupped under her fanny, praying that nothing plops out and stains the carpet. Amara calls it a cum run. Chapter 19, 16th of February. Life is about patience and trust, of which I have neither.
Yes, finally an audition. It's a really good audition too, a supporting lead in a new comedy film. The premise sounds fun, if a little tacky. Regardless, I'm thrilled and I'm grateful. The more I read the script, the more I'm convinced I could really get this. With Symbol of Freedom now officially under my belt,
I'm bound to at least get a call back. It's not like I lack the credentials. I've been in a film before. I've done comedy before. If this industry worked the same way as all the normal ones, I would say I'm fully qualified. I could land this. Finally, something I can focus on that isn't a Black Forest Gatto order or an electricity bill. Winner, winner, chicken dinner.
Chapter 20, 18th of February. The lyric I've had stuck in my head is something along the lines of, "There ain't no rest for the wicked." I think that applies greatly to the acting industry. The horrible actors with the worst reputations always seem to be the ones forever in work. Tilly was being weird. It's not like her to call me up out of the blue for no reason at all and ask to go for a coffee. I thought maybe she'd finally found out about Oliver and me bumping uglies and wanted to put me in my place. But no. She literally got me out of my pyjamas, away from the safety and comfort of my duvet, and into a snobbish, overpriced, artisan coffee shop to talk about work.
"I don't want a big song and dance like we had for you, so I'm telling everyone who needs to know one-on-one."
She took a big, dramatic pause.
"I got a job."
"Oh yeah?" I humoured her. "What's the job?" Her eyes sparkled with pure delight.
"It's a lead in a new streaming series. 10 episodes. I fly to Jamaica on Friday."
I almost dropped my brew. It only took me a few seconds to pull myself together.
Tilly clearly wanted a big, jealous reaction out of me, but I wasn't playing that game. I wasn't going to give her the satisfaction of knowing she got to me.
"That's brilliant." I forced a smile and reached across the table to give her hand a squeeze. "Oh, I'm so happy for you." I lied. Any actor who says they're happy for their actor friends when they land roles is lying. That's why actors are rarely friends with each other. You can't be happy for someone who potentially took a job that could have been yours.
The only reason Tilly and I have lasted this long is because our casting types are polar opposites. She can't do comedy or anything that requires a northern accent, and I can't do whatever the hell it is she's good at. I'm yet to find out what that actually is.
Tilly let out a sigh of relief.
"Oh, thank God. I almost didn't tell you.
What with it all going quiet on the job front since you got back, I didn't want it to come across like I was rubbing it in." "Of course you didn't," I thought. For someone who's taken more acting classes than anyone else I know,
Tilly really is awful.
"I mean, I'm assuming it's still quiet," she pushed. "Is it? Or has Bethany been able to scrape an audition out of the bottom of the barrel for you?"
"Well, now that you mention it, yeah, she has. I've actually got an audition tomorrow afternoon. Another movie, so a great follow-on from Symbol. I've met the casting director before, and it's a comedy part, so should be a good one."
Tilly's eyes widened ever so slightly.
"Oh, that's great."
She trailed off, no doubt calculating her next move.
"I'll see if any of my mates have gone up for it as well. Keep you in the round robin for when it gets cast so you know not to keep your hopes up unnecessarily."
I couldn't help but suck my teeth. It might have been because I was already in a foul mood, but she was coming off across bitchier than usual. "Maybe it's because she knows you've bounced on top of her brother," I considered. "Maybe this is her way of getting back at you." "No."
If Tilly knew Oliver and I had hooked up, she wouldn't even be speaking to me.
"Now there's a thought. Forgot to ask. How's your brother doing?"
"He's fine."
"Why?"
Tilly's eyebrows furrowed, her face turning from smug to suspicious.
"No reason," I smiled wickedly. "Just, I have one of his socks. Found it under my bed the other day when I was doing the hoovering. Wondered if he might want it back." Chapter 21, 3rd of May. Pale blue is such a lovely colour. Just a shame I can't wear it to any occasion ever. I sweat too much. I'm a sweater, if nothing else. And pale blue is such an unforgiving colour when it comes to sweat marks. Been weeks since my audition and I've heard nothing. It's excruciating. I really thought I'd nailed my meeting too. I made the casting director laugh. I'd impressed them with all my anecdotes about my time on Symbol, none of which included the moments where I'd thoroughly made an idiot of myself, of course. I just need somebody to put me out of my misery.
The whole no news is good news line is wearing thin. According to the email, they don't start filming till 14th of May, so there's still hope. They could be still weighing up their options. I could still be in the running. Mum suggested when I first started out as an actor that I should buy myself a bunch of flowers whenever I go for an audition, and then if they're dead before I've heard back, I know I haven't got the job. It was a nice idea, till I had a graveyard of flowers in the kitchen and was found sobbing in a pool of my own tears on the floor, adamant there was still hope. Don't throw those away. I know it's been 3 months, but they could still call. Could be any day now. Don't throw them away.
My phone is ringing.
Oh God, it's Bethany. Infuriatingly, Bethany didn't mention the audition at all. She was too busy nattering away about this bloody Symbol of Freedom rap party. I'd received the email invite a week ago and just assumed it had been sent to me by mistake. Personally, I think it's a great opportunity, Mel. Agent translation, you need to go. It's a private event in a bar just opposite Soho Theatre. There shouldn't be any press, but there will be all the execs, some of the cast, crew, etc. She took a deep intake of breath. And as I said, it's a really great opportunity. Agent translation, you have to go, or else. Before I knew it, I was standing, hairpiece wet through, in my dressing gown, looking at my haggard reflection, wondering why on God's green earth I'd said yes. A rat party, for Pete's sake. For what purpose? I FaceTimed Amara, thinking she would be able to provide some form of comfort. She didn't. I perched her on my windowsill so she could get a full view of the hot mess she was dealing with. Outfit after outfit being rejected. Too casual, too formal, too summery, too wintry.
What are you doing with your hair?
Having it up or down? Why does that matter?
Well, if you have your hair up and like some dangly earrings, it'll make your jeans look less casual. Especially if you put it with a sexy top.
I don't own any sexy tops, Amara.
Well, what about a skirt then?
I haven't shaved my legs.
Could wear tights.
They've all got ladders in them. This is what we deal with every single time we have to make an outfit decision. A wardrobe full of clothes and yet nothing to wear.
What about your nice denim jacket?
Amara sipped her wine and pointed off camera.
The one hanging on the back of your door.
I pulled on my jacket and we both hummed, denim on denim. Absolutely not, we no doubt thought in unison. I ripped the jacket back off.
Have you got any nice dresses?
I foraged through my dresser and extracted the poor excuse of a dress Ian had given me for Christmas. I have this, I joked, but Amara wasn't laughing. She was snapping her fingers and dancing across my phone screen, wine raised high in the air.
Yes, oh my God, yes!
I rolled my eyes. Over my dead body. She pushed her face as close to the camera as possible.
Belle, please, begging you. Shave your legs in the sink, get your face done, get your hair up, whack on some hoops and rock that dress.
It's a flannel, Amara.
It's genius.
How had Amara convinced me to do this? My body was wrapped in a sliver of green fabric, my legs covered in cuts from a rusty razor, and my hair in a frizzy ponytail doused in hairspray. The tube was full of people in sweatpants and jeans. I felt obscenely overdressed. A few eyes looked my way and I felt myself riddled with insecurity. It threw up all those comments people had made about me when those articles came out all those weeks ago. Her tits looked like crushed cloves of garlic under that top. I shuddered. Maybe I should have worn a push-up bra. Maybe I should own a push-up bra. Reflecting on those comments made me think about the one thing my brain had been trying to avoid from the moment the invite had come through. Jack. God, I felt sick. I'd convinced myself he wouldn't be there. He'd already be on to the next job. No time for silly little rat parties attended by silly little people like me, who are available at a moment's notice because they have no active social life, / life in general. My brain had thrown up every worst case scenario on the walk from Leicester Square tube station to the venue. My biggest fear? I would arrive and have no one remember me, because why would they? I rapped 4 bloody months ago.
I felt like drinking my worries away, but felt fearful that it would somehow end up with me finding a picture of myself online tomorrow, blacked out on the pavement, using a slice of pizza as a pillow. Little did I know that would have been preferable compared to what was actually in store for me. Security let me in, one not so subtly scanning me up and down as I squeezed past him and into the venue. It was a poorly lit bar, littered with burgundy leather booths. Cringe. The place was packed, filled to the brim with tons of people I didn't recognise. No Warren, Simon, Toby or Osse. No one under the age of 40. That realisation was enough to make me turn and bolt. Only I'd not paid close enough attention to my surroundings, and instead of finding myself back at the entrance, I was suddenly outside in a smoking area. Three people, huddled around a fire pit, surrounded by a haze of smoke. These three I did recognise. Not from filming, but from online. Oscar Azia, beauty guru slash model. Elena Stansky, supermodel. And Kimberly Kay, actor and Jack's ex-PR stunt girlfriend.
You all right, boo?
Kimberly looked up from the flames.
You look a bit lost.
Well, I choked, feeling a little like a lamb chop that had just been thrown into a glamorous, Botox-filled hyena den. I was looking for the toilet, I improvised. Must have taken a wrong turn.
I can show you, love. Hold on.
Kimberly stubbed out her cigarette with her glittery heel.
Follow me.
As she took my arm, I got a strong wave of perfume. Eye-wateringly strong. Like when you walk through the glass doors at a department store and it takes four floors for the smell to dissipate.
I swear I recognise your face, she whispered, just as the door slammed shut behind us. Were you at Stansky's show last Friday night?
No, I thought. I was in my local corner shop buying German meatballs and a bunch of scratch cards last Friday night. Don't think so, I laughed nervously, mentally acknowledging the fact that she probably knew me from the articles that claimed I'd stolen her fake boyfriend. Maybe it's no longer fake, I thought. It then occurred to me that Kimberly had no real reason to be here other than as Jack's plus one. And if Jack's plus one was here, then so was the man himself. We entered the fluorescently lit toilets and I rushed into the nearest cubicle, hoping and praying Kimberly would now leave so I could make a proper escape.
You must have been desperate, Kimberly called from the other side of the door. Are you not with anyone?
I dabbed my forehead and pits with some toilet roll.
No, I'm on my own.
Oh, I heard a tap running. Well, you should come hang with us. We're just waiting for Jack to come back. I could have smashed my head against the toilet bowl. Why had I said I was on my own? Why was God or my guardian angel or whoever is in charge of my life doing this to me? Sick bastard, whoever you are.
He went out for some more ciggies. Do you smoke?
I reappeared from the toilet and found Kimberly perched next to the sink, fixing the tiny pink strap of her top.
No, I don't,
I said quietly, hoping that didn't make me uncool as it so often seems to with people who do smoke. I washed my hands with Kimberly watching me, idly swinging her legs back and forth.
I don't either. Not really. A social smoke, you know. Can't do an acting job these days without smoking. If you don't smoke, you miss out on all the good gossip.
I nodded, even though I hadn't the faintest idea what she was talking about. The mention of an acting job must have connected a couple of dots in her brain, though, because Kimberly's face suddenly fell.
Are you an actor?
She asked, hopping down from the counter.
Were you in this?
Yeah, I confessed. Only a small part, though.
Oh.
Kimberly's face lit up.
You'll know Jack, then. Amazing. He'll be so relieved to see someone he actually worked with.
We've had nothing but office people from production he's never met, because Jasmine's on some shoot in Toronto, and so many of the crew are Manchester-based and couldn't make it down. Kimberly took my arm again after I dried my hands. Why they didn't just throw the rap party up there is beyond me. Would have loved a cheeky city break in Manchester.
Like, have you been to Canal Street? It's ace. Not like this dive.
She pulled me out of the toilet and back the way we came. I felt like digging my heels into the beer-stained carpet. I was hating every second of this. There was no way of convincing Kimberly that Jack would almost certainly not be relieved to see me. Especially if all hasn't gone well with his granddad since we last spoke. Oh, God. The fire door to the smoking area clunked open and Kimberly skipped out, her heels clicking against the concrete. In any other situation, I'm sure we could have been great girl besties. Girl besties in the sense of you meet a girl at a party, who's usually pissed as hell, in the bathroom, and within minutes you're in platonic love. You hype up each other's outfits, overshare your life within minutes of knowing each other, build up each other's confidence higher than anyone else in your life has before, only to leave the bathroom never to see or think about each other ever again. That kind of girl bestie. Jack had his back to the door and was hunched over the fire pit, engulfed by smoke. Kimberly patted him on the shoulder. As he turned, I felt my knees almost give way.
God, you look sexy,
was the first and only thing to come out of his mouth. I could have dropped dead.
As if he just said that. As if he just said that in front of all these people.
Doesn't she just? Kimberly beamed, either genuinely unfazed or just that good of an actress, she was covering it well. That dress is stunning. Charity shop, £4.50. I answered without thinking. Northern habit. Someone compliments you on your outfit and you automatically tell them where you got it and how much it was. In normal circumstances, you usually met with oohs and ahs, especially if it was a bargain. But around company that probably never live in the realms of single pounds and pence, I was instead met with four blank faces. I smiled awkwardly. This was the universe giving me a clear cue to leave before I embarrassed myself any further. Jack took a long drag of his lit cigarette, breaking out into a grin that stretched from ear to ear.
Kim, Oscar, Eleanor, this is Mel.
Oscar and Eleanor beamed, and Kimberly, if possible, got even more friendly.
Mel? She smacked Jack's shoulder. Why didn't you say sooner? We've heard so much about you.
Oh, good God. All good things, I hope. I laughed nervously. Jack took another drag.
Can I get you a drink? Double rum and coke, yeah?
My jaw clenched, and despite attempting to bite my tongue, the words, just water this time, came tumbling out of my mouth. For the next 2 hours, I tried my best to make every excuse to leave, but nothing could shake them. Oscar was eager to know everything about my time on the job, keen to get every detail of what Jack was really like to work with. With Jack present, I only spoke of the good stuff, complimenting his natural instinct, while still joking that even if his acting in the film is crap, no one is going to care while he's wearing that pilot uniform. As soon as Jack mentioned I was an aspiring writer, Eleanor was babbling about her favourite books and plays. Kimberly wanted to know why I got into acting. I gave a vague answer. Bits and pieces of the truth, muddled together with the generic, it's just always what I've wanted to do. I continued. I was really lucky to have supportive parents.
Wish my folks were like that, Kimberly mused. My dad especially is dead set against what I do for a living. He says my acting career is basically just prostitution by another name.
Can you blame him? Oscar teased. The poor bloke's had to see you get your kit off and simulate sex in almost every role you've played.
We all laughed, really laughed. Except for Jack, who was just quietly observing from the corner, staring at me. Made me wonder what I was doing wrong. I think I better head home, I blurted out.
Already?
Kimberly queried.
We were just about to hit a couple of clubs. You're welcome to join us.
Yeah, sorry, I stalled. It's just that I've got an early start tomorrow.
Do you want me to order you a cab?
Eleanor got out her phone, but I protested. No, it's fine. I'll get the tube. Jack drained his pint, then stubbed out his cig.
I'll walk you.
Kimberly did a double take.
Jack, there's like 20 photographers scheduled to be outside. Let Oscar walk her, or Eleanor.
Jack rolled his eyes.
We'll go out via the back.
He kissed her cheek affectionately.
I'll be careful, Kim. See you in 10.
I wish Jack hadn't offered. I wish I hadn't agreed. We managed to sneak out of a back entrance and after a quick jump over a series of bin bags, we were on the main road. No photographers in sight, though I smelled like a rotten banana.
Which line do you need to get?
Jack asked, trying to start a conversation. Piccadilly, I replied, purposefully not giving him much to work with. The less conversation we had, the less chance there would be of me saying something stupid again.
You had a good night?
Jack tried again. Yeah, your friends are nice.
They're not really my friends, to be honest. They're Kimberly's mates. She brought them because I didn't know how much schmoozing I'd need to do, and she didn't want to be on her own all night.
Schmoozing? Isn't that just a fancy word for networking? I snorted disdainfully. God, this man is a walking contradiction. Remember? Networking? That bullshit that's only for naive actors like me?
I mean schmooze as in say thanks to all the folks who helped to make the film. Not kiss their asses and beg for an innings when the next casting call comes rolling out.
Fair enough. I shrugged, not fully convinced. We walked a little more. Eventually, curiosity and genuine interest got the better of me. How's your granddad doing? Jack's face fell a little, but then he softly sighed and forced a grin.
He's doing good. Responding well to his treatment. Struggling on his feet, but still able to live independently, so that's something.
That's great, I encouraged, my heart undeniably going out to him. How are you feeling about it all? Jack shrugged and we left it there. I wasn't going to push it, especially with the station entrance now in sight. The time had come to say goodbye, and this time I wouldn't jump him or say something stupid and insensitive. I'd play it cool and leave him with a positive, everlasting impression of me. After all, he had called me sexy. Yes, good plan, Mel. Well, this is me. I pointed at Leicester Square's bright, shining, dark blue sign before rummaging around in my purse for my card. I've just got to find my... A pair of lips suddenly landed on mine, warm and smooth. The stubble on Jack's upper lip tickled my skin. His hand caressed the curve of my waist and I felt as though I was melting into his touch. I'm going to turn into a puddle. The kiss felt like an infinite moment. Time suspended while my brain tried to catch up with the reality that Jack was kissing me. His lips were on me, voluntarily. The kiss lasted longer than it should have done, but also nowhere near long enough. He pulled away and I was left, legs shaking, feet frozen to the spot.
Was good seeing you, Mel.
Yeah, I trailed off, watching him turn on his heel and walk away. Good seeing you too.